What's up, game goobers, Ludo losers, and board game brainiacs? It's a podcast with your boy Quinns and Tom, the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, live from Tom's lounge.
I have never wanted to leave the room we're recording in less. This is like, okay, so we have a new podcast recording setup that we've talked about before. It's currently now both of us holding mics to our mouths,
like we're
stand-up performers, sat on your sofas.
Quinns is sat formally like a nice boy. He's got his shoes on in my house, which I do disapprove of.
Yeah, but
he looks smart and put together. I've got my dogs out. I'm wearing the clothes that I'm gonna exercise in very soon.
Yeah, okay. No, this is only painting half the picture. What people at the home need to understand is that while Tom had that like very grody, grime-ridden introductory sentence to the podcast, you've also taken this as an opportunity to lounge.
Like, I'm lounging.
You're not. I can see feet, calf, both thighs. your elbow. One of your arms is cast back behind your head, like you're in a Renaissance painting. Mm-hmm. You're altogether too comfortable, and I don't like it.
I'm quite greasy as well.
Oh, I hate this. A
little greasy podcast for listeners at home. Look, I've never been a fan of board games.
We've just fallen so far.
I've never been a fan of the whole board games, and people who love board games intro. So I'm trying to put a youthful spin on it to get the kids on side.
And I'm here for that. I'm here for that. The board games and the whatever, like that is more like a sort of wart that, like, you know, it was a growth that appeared on the podcast that was just really dogged and persistent.
Right.
And I'm here to have you remove that. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if you have to do it quasi-nude.
I'm popping a scab off this podcast in the buff.
On this podcast, we're going to not have any nudity, thankfully. Not that I'm a prude. I'm not a prude.
You just, you did the most prudish thing. You insulted me for having my calves out.
Yeah.
You and saw ankle
calves,
and you
ankles, both thighs. Look, we're going to be talking about three board games. We're going to be talking about The White Castle, a small box De Vere Euro game, because Tom can't stop giving me those, apparently. We're going to be talking about Soloween, a little abstract game that Tom was bad at. And finally, Tom, you're going to be talking about a little package you received containing three games.
A whole little cluster of import games, one of which was 535 that I reviewed. The other two are Harvest and Bridge City Poker, one of which I like a lot, and one of which I don't like at all.
I love when we do that little tease.
Oh, it's fun, isn't it?
It's always good.
First up on this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about The White Castle. This is, as Quinns alluded to, yet another small box De Vere Euro game. This is the third podcast you've been on in a row where you've come to my house. We played a small box to a Euro game, and then we talked about it on a podcast.
What there was Bamboo. And then
we talked about Three Ring Circus.
Oh, that was a small box to a Euro. That was a small box to a Euro game. Jesus.
And now we're talking about The White Castle, which is another color building combo from the designers of The Red Cathedral, designed by Shay S. and Isra C., who have both had their surnames redacted on the front of the box of this, probably to prevent white British board game reviewers from getting their names wrong. I'm absolutely butchering some pronunciations.
Okay, so what are we doing in The White Castle, Thomas?
You're trying to get points. It's another points game, Quinns. They're all the rage these days. All the kids love it. You're trying to build up a big castle. You're trying to get your little nobles inside
of
that
trying to build up a castle, are you?
The castle already exists.
Get it right. This is because unlike Bamboo, which we talked about being like a weird, poorly researched fan letter to all things Japanese, this, I believe, is based on a real castle?
Yes, I think so.
And you're trying to get your farmers, soldiers, and dudes, or women, inside
of that castle.
Yes.
So that you can get points.
Points, yeah.
It all comes back to points.
It does, yeah.
What this is, at its core, is a dice placement game. So you've got, at the side of this board, you have a handsome set of three little bridges that have a bunch of dice that have been planted onto them. On your turn, you're going to pick up one of those dice, and you're going to place it on one of the different spots on the board. There's tons of different spots, but they're all fairly simple. Various spaces will get you resources, like money and iron and pearls, which are a strange set of things, but you're basically going to be using these resources to get your little characters onto the board. You have these little wooden meeples, some that are warriors, some that are gardeners, some that are politicians or palace officials, something like that, servants maybe, I don't know. And you're going to be trying to get them onto the board, playing sort of three separate little mini games. Gardeners will get you little bonuses when you put them on the board. They'll get you points at the end of the game, and they also will trigger their bonus again if someone leaves a dice on that bridge at the end of a round. There's three bridges, you're going to be taking the dice off them. There's some left, whoopee for you. The soldiers are going to go into these little training fields where they get immediate bonuses, and they will multiply the score of people you get in the palace. The palace is where this game, this teach for the game is going to come off the rails a bit because I'm going to have to explain the weird little thing you got going on in your player board.
Yeah.
So you pay some money to get your palace official to the gates of the palace. Then you pay pearls to get them to ascend up the ranks of the palace. Where they land, they will take the card that is in that slot. There are these cards that get dealt out at the start of the game that basically determine what certain spaces do. So for example, there's three spaces that you can put a three dice in at the bottom of the palace, and they'll have random cards dished out into those slots that change the actions that you get from those spaces every game. As well as, there are these little tokens that determine which colours of dice you put into that slot to get the different actions. We'll come back to this later, but there's like tons of random setup in this game that I think is the most interesting thing about it, but also maybe like its biggest shortfall, maybe?
I wouldn't disagree with the... Well, keep talking.
Yeah. So when you then place your palace official, you get one of those actions, and you take the whole card and you put it onto your player board, dislodging the old card that was on there and putting it into this little socket where... It's called your lantern bonus. Certain times during the game, you'll be told to take your lantern bonus, which is a little row of accumulated bonuses you've got over the course of the game.
I think a simple way to express this is it's a worker placement game with randomized card setup. When you advance people into the cards, you can take those worker placement spaces for yourself for a second, but then the next time you take one, it'll go into a weird engine building
game. Yeah, taking those worker placement spaces for yourself is the way to put it, because you socket it onto your board, and you've always got these three actions where if you put a six on your board, then you get to take a whole set of bonuses as well as the action that you just put onto your little player board from the cards from the middle. It's quite hard to explain. It's best if you look at a picture of this one, I think, quite possibly.
So here's my hot take. This game is drab. And
it's drab.
Hard.
It's really hard.
And I don't know if there's another adjective I've got to deploy on this game that is any more flattering than those two things. I was thinking, when you first started teaching it and I started playing it, which you've played this game three times. And
three
I
times.
Really felt that going into this because very quickly you start getting more resources and your engine took off a little faster than mine.
You got monstered.
I got monstered. You definitely beat the tar out of me. And I... felt like it. If you're listening to this podcast and you're a fan of Vital Lacerda, Eurogames, the Shut Up and Sit Down traditionally hasn't been that hot on, although I have a soft spot for Vinhos, Matt has a soft spot for The Gallerist. But those games are just, it's very, very, very challenging to get anything.
Right.
And then often when you do succeed, your reward for that is some points or some resources. Like that really felt front of mind to me because tomorrow, for reasons that are very exciting and that we'll be revealing soon, we're going to be playing Agricola, the classic Uwe Rosenberg Eurogame that launched 1,000 Eurogame designs where you build a farm.
Yeah.
It's very colourful.
Yeah.
And in this, I really felt that Lacerda friction of like, oh my God, I'm working so hard and I'm not building a cool farm with a cool oven and a loaf of bread and a boy. I am just getting integers that I'm then going to spend on getting a different kind of integer.
100%. I also think it definitely has the way that people have described Vital Lacerda games to me. I've only played The Gallerist, but this idea of, right, so you want some wheat. Well, first you're going to need to, like, in the White Castle, just to labour the point here, you are first going to choose a dice from the bridge. You may only choose two dice at any given time. One of them will give you a bonus, one of them won't. You then place it onto the board where you have to pay some money based on the difference between the number on the dice and the number of the space.
Yep.
Then the colour of the dice determines which action you get. So there are only certain places you can socket a dice on any given turn because you'll only get one action, but maybe you get two because some spaces have two. Then that might trigger like another thing. And there's this like clockwork like thing where, hey, I want to get like one wheat or something. You can do that, but you get nine turns in the entirety of this game. So you feel like you really have to squeeze every single turn. And if you take one turn where you just get like a bit of money, you feel like you've failed.
Yeah.
Like I think that I definitely set the pace wonky. Because the first turn of the game that I took was like this big explosion of resources and getting guys out and you were like, oh,
yeah.
Help me. And I think this game's biggest strength is that I looked at that 40 point, after our first game, I scored like 20 something points. And I looked at that 40 point end of the track and I was like, that's so high. And then I saw these little tokens that have plus 40 points on them for if you exceed the track. And I went, there's no way. And then I flipped those and they said plus 80. And I went, what are you talking about? And that to me represents this game like throwing down the gauntlet, being like, there is a possibility that if you perfectly navigate this puzzle, you'll be able to squeeze out like 80 points and you'll feel like a king because the game is so, so restricted.
Yeah, and I think that sort of challenge is, you know, a reason to be excited by the White Castle.
Because that's why I've played it three times, because I've been trying to ratchet up my high score.
So if that plus 80 token, which could be just because they had space on the punch board, but the presence of that token has coaxed you into playing this again and again to try and get better at it.
Yeah.
And you are getting better, but how do you feel about, because you just released a really well-received in the board game community video on Gollum.
Yes.
The Eurogame, which is good. But, you know, it's yet another Eurogame on the giant, not bonfire, that's a very cruel term, but I will say bonfire, the huge bonfire of Eurogames that are good, not great, that no one necessarily needs.
Correct.
This, to me, feels like exactly that. It's solid. Is it great? No. Do I want to buy it? No.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already got, you know, 20 Eurogames in my collection that I don't play enough.
I sort of agree. I agree and disagree. In that Gollum video, I think my problem with it is that the systems combined to something that was, like, good. It was fine. Like, it was a good Euro game, and then it was definitely dragged down by the fact that it never really seemed to explore its theme in any interesting way.
Right.
It has a theme that is, like, it could have done something really interesting, right? Gollum's theme is about, ostensibly, about you building golems to protect the Prague ghetto from anti-Semites. Hmm. Does that happen in the game? Not at all. You generate victory points and get currency. And I think that, like, that's what kind of knocks it down in my brain is like, oh my God, you were so close to having a good game, but with a killer theme. And instead it's a good game with a quite bad theme,
yeah,
or not the best theme in the world. So I think that White Castle is in this is a similar space. It is another De Vere small box Euro, which means that it is, at least you, it doesn't take up as much space in your life if you choose to keep this thing around.
I think the best thing about it is if you own this and Red Cathedral and Bamboo for some reason and Silk for some reason, you can have all those four games and they're exactly the correct dimensions on your shelf.
Yes.
But out of all the De Beers small box games, it's all right. Out of all the small box De Beers games we played, though, my favorite is still Three Ring Circus.
I think I might prefer the White Castle in terms of its game.
A stupid man.
I like Three Ring Circus is gorgeous. It's one of the prettiest games.
It has
ever.
A really solid theme.
Yeah.
It is different and unlike any other Eurogame in your collection.
Yeah.
It doesn't quite play. White Castle even plays kind of like other dice placement games. It plays like worker placement games. The theme is poor.
It is quite poor. I agree. I just think there is something like, so there's another thing that I like about this game, which is that, like, when you play it for the second time, Quince, when you inevitably come back to play it a second time, there's something...
Which, let's be clear, I am gasping to do. I can't
desperate.
Wait to end this podcast to set a date in my calendar when I can come back here and play White Castle again.
We can
again.
Set it up right now, Quince.
Oh, that I would simply be too excited, Tom. I couldn't bring myself to do it.
No, if you... I think that... When I then, this is what I mean about it having that plus 40 points token, the plus 80 points. I played it again and was like, what am I not seeing in this game? Like, what was I doing wrong in that first game that meant that I didn't, you know, get up there in the high echelons? And I think playing it again a few times, it becomes a very interesting game of reading like a board state and working out.
Correct.
Because there's so much random setup, right? Like, so many different things are random. Like, which cards you have in the actual palace.
Yes, which
itself.
Makes it, to be clear, horrific for new players. Because
yeah.
It means the challenge is in looking at all these random cards and going, ooh, that's a good deal.
Exactly, yeah. And I think that there's something really, like, keen about this, like, exploiting a loophole in that game and getting yourself, like, to boost up, like, points in a way that's very exciting. And that's cool. And actually, I'm already kind of in my head, like, walking back that I like it more than Three Ring Circus as a package.
I'm just saying,
I think it's a good puzzle.
There are, but this is exactly what you're talking about, the Gollum video and theme, right? If you want a Euro game which is about looking for exploits and exploiting them, I'm thinking about something like Beyond the Sun, which also has, which is, I think we can both agree, Beyond the Sun is really good.
It's really good.
It blows White Castle out of the water.
I agree.
But additionally, that's a game with random setup of cards and exploiting loopholes, but where those cards also have a theme, because each card is a cool, slightly dystopian space technology.
It's so dry, but it's also good. Like,
it's
that's
dry,
the thing.
But also you are filling a ship with clones and sending it to Mars, where those clones will labor forever.
Forever and ever. Yeah, I think that there is... I enjoyed playing the White Castle. Like, I've enjoyed every game of it. I've had a good time, but I would not push anyone. It is the same point in the Gollum video. I wouldn't push this on anyone immediately being like, oh, shoot, this is so good. It doesn't have that sort of like extra little like spritz that puts it above everything else. I still think Red Cathedral might be. It's at least more welcoming.
I think Red Cathedral, then Three Ring Circus, then maybe
Silk.
Silk is an abstract game. Given that
Silk's very different.
We've basically said the people at home don't need to know about White Castle, shall we tell them about our next game.
Yeah, let's move on to our next game.
Because I've got a seg.
Okay,
put in a sting, but make it fast so I can get to my seg.
Okay.
Okay, well, I can't get to my seg yet because I need to explain Solarween, but after that, Here we go. So Solarween, which is designed by Shi Chen and I believe is a Taiwanese game, has the following text on the back. It's not perfectly translated, but you know what? If I was releasing a game in Taiwan, it wouldn't be perfectly translated either. So no shade to the translation here. Solarween is the most bustling festival at Death School. Its name derives from an old saying, soul to win, which means reap the souls to claim victory. Freeze! I almost got you! But the naughty souls won't be that easy to be caught. Right? So this is an abstract game in which it's got a sort of mat, which feels like the material that comes from that you use to clean glasses.
Yep. One of those little fabric
microfiber
glasses.
That's fabric, the one. Yeah, which honestly actually is quite nice.
I'm quite into.
It's got black tokens with happy souls on one side and sad souls on another, which honestly are way better than they have any right to be. Mm-hmm. It has some cards with really nice art for a game with maybe like, I don't know, it's a tiny box. Stick that in your small box game, Devere. This is like, you know, again, it's almost the size you could fit a pair of glasses in. Everything about this production is really nice.
Yes.
And then what you've got really is a 4x4 grid, mm-hmm, on which players are going to be taking turns to either place a happy soul or a sad soul. When you put a soul down, all the orthogonally adjacent souls flip. So if you put down happy soul, all the nearby souls to the north, south, east, and west will flip to their other side. Mm-hmm. The objective in doing, the players then take turns doing this. If at the end of your turn, you've created a line all the way across, either diagonally or lengthwise or breadthwise, I feel like I could have explained this game
vertically
in 10 seconds.
Or horizontally.
Thanks. Then you remove them and score a point.
Yes.
First to 3 points wins.
Yep.
Also, we should say this game was dramatically improved because it is so chess-like. We played with a chess clock, mm-hmm, which is a tip. It's been a while since we've talked about how good this is, but if you're ever not enjoying a game, chuck a chess clock in because, my goodness, chess clock, best secret mechanic. If you don't know what a chess clock is, I'm not going to explain it. But Google it. But you can get free apps that do it.
Yeah, I got one like straight away and it worked.
Yeah, it made Solarween really good. So here's what I was going to say. You did not enjoy Solarween.
This is your seg? It's so deep buried into this. Oh my goodness.
No, my seg was that I just wanted to say, because we played White Castle and you were like,
correct.
Oh, this is so, we did. Correct. Thanks
yeah,
for,
we played
thanks
it,
for
yeah,
backing
yeah.
me up. We played White Castle and you went, you know, this is, you preempted me by saying, this is really hard. Uh-huh. And the amount of like math and like you have to spot paths and the laddering you have to do of like, oh, I want a coin, which means I need to get a dice and place it on this space, but oh, I don't have the rice to do that or whatever. Solarween also is really hard, mm-hmm, especially if you play with a chess clock. It's just a bastard.
Yes.
But you immediately, this is my seg, you immediately gave up. Like we played it and you said like, oh, my brain can't do this. Uh-huh. And then chess clock was kind of your way of thinking even less about the game because you had to play fast and you didn't have to sit there
yes.
for a minute.
Yeah, that's true.
Whereas White Castle, just because it had that plus 80, you said, I can't possibly stop playing this game until I've seen how good I can be. So and just to get my points in here, I demolished you at Solarween.
You absolutely wiped the floor with me. We played three games
I did not
win a single one.
I didn't actually. We played three games and you won 2 out of 3 points in all of them. So you were actually very close to winning.
That's cool.
Yeah. But this is again my point. You gave up. So, like, what is it in... And to clarify, I don't know if I'd tell anybody to rush out and buy Solarween, but if you want an abstract that is, you know, really very cute, very simple, mm-hmm, and has a nice advanced game in which you can play different teachers at Soul School or Death School or whatever. So my question to you is why?
I don't know.
Okay.
I've never been... I don't know what it is about abstract games that makes my brain switch off.
Here's the thing.
Like
I don't want to blow your mind.
Okay.
On this Friday morning. You're tired and I can
I'm going to edit this podcast immediately after this.
I don't want to shatter your small boy brain.
Okay.
But all board games are abstract games.
Yeah. Yeah, boo. This is like that point that's like, oh yeah, all board games are auction games. Off. Like, I mean, it's just not true.
Yeah, well, it is. Okay, but me being facetious aside, like, I mean, it's the genre, the buckets we put games into, this is an abstract game. This
All
is
video
game.
Games are platformers.
That's not true.
Yeah, it is. It's true.
Is it?
Yeah, prove me wrong. What's a video game that's not a platformer?
Okay, Caves of Quad.
Yeah, it's a platformer because you're moving a little guy around a platform. Can you jump in Caves of Quad? Probably.
Look, I just... Solarween is also... White Castle, you're looking at the board, you're looking for... I'm not saying you're wrong here. I just wanted to take an opportunity within this little Soloween segment to explore your brain and say why.
That's fun.
Because White Castle is just about looking for opportunities, and that's exactly what you're doing in Soloween. It's just simpler. Right. I just don't have to sit and listen to you teach rules for 15 minutes before we start playing.
I think that it's. I think it's the.
I know. I'm making you think on this.
No,
this
yeah, you're making me think on a podcast. God, that's not all the lessons want at all. I think that it's just the fact that it's like a spatial puzzle rather than a numbers puzzle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, this occurred to me during White Castle, because White Castle is pure arithmetic.
Yeah.
And I think that that is one of the ways in which the board game industry is crap and what's the word? Unwelcoming.
Sure.
Because Eurogames represents such a huge part of the board game community, right? If you don't like Eurogames, that's immediately like a bit like, ooh, you don't like any Eurogames? But all Eurogames are basically math.
Right.
All Eurogames are basically like, well, I want a victory point that's worth one, so what is the most cost-effective action path to getting the most victory points?
Sure.
Spoiler, that is why I tend to win a lot of Eurogames, is because I'm weighing up, okay, ultimately, if I take this action, how many, roughly, if I do all the fucking maths, how many victory points does that get me?
Yeah.
And sometimes that math is super abstract, but generally that's why I tend to beat people at Eurogames.
Yeah.
But spatial versus maths, it's like, that is actually, it's such a, you so readily made the statement that you were willing to play White Castle forever. So really what you're saying there is I prefer math to spatial puzzles, and I think that makes you the weirdo.
I think
the board game community tends to think of abstract games as weird, and I don't think that's fair.
I think that there's something about the fact that, so I agree that, yeah, like, sure, whatever. If we're going down the argument of, yeah, all games are abstract games secretly, it's like, I think the difference with White Castle is that, and both reward planning, right? Both Soloween and White Castle are games that reward doing a little bit of planning, a little bit of thinking ahead.
The difference is
visualization to me, in the sense that in White Castle, let's say I need like 3 coins like to do this action next turn, right? I'm taking little actual physical chits, like reminders, and there's iconography on the board to point me in a direction of like being reminded that, you know, this is the money that I have, this is what I need, and I can actually make a plan with like visual piece of information in front of me. Whereas in Soloween, you're looking at like a grid, and then you are like,
it all has to go in your head, baby.
It all has to live in your head, the whole game, because you put down something and it's like, my brain is even disconnecting at the fact that you put a little guy down, then you flip the two, you flip everything around it.
Yeah.
And it's like, right, so I need to put one down. And then as soon as I'm thinking about putting it down, I'm not thinking about the color of even the piece I'm putting down anymore. I'm thinking about what color it will make the pieces next to it.
Yeah.
And how it's going to flip those.
And then you add a chess clock, and baby, you got a stew going.
And I think the good thing about the chess clock is it makes you play much more on impulse.
Yes.
Which I think is, I'm better at that, because I think I've always struggled with, I remember, maybe this is because it's like a, you know, welcome to Tom's cursed dark memory corner of like, when I was in year 5, I went to chess club.
Okay.
And I went to chess club, I did 3 sessions of chess club, and every single week, the first game I played, what's that move? There's like an opening, basically. It was in year 5.
Is this like the queen sacrifice thing?
That one where basically you can make it so that you can instantly check with like getting a bishop out in a weird way.
Oh,
where, like,
I don't know, yeah.
If you move one of your pawns forward, like, 2 spaces, it gives this little like opening.
Oh, for the bishop to slide out.
Where you can where they can like slam a bishop so that there's nowhere for your king because you've locked yourself in.
Oh, okay.
So I lost like every game at chess club, like first turn, because I'd made every week for 3 weeks in a row, I made that same opening. And my friend who was at chess club went, you've done it again, and then owned me in exactly the same way. And it's that I've never had the brain for like that level of like planning in advance unless I have the like visualization of like chits and tokens and stuff to play with.
You know what you do sound like? Okay, first off, I don't want this to be Quinns versus Tom, because you giving up is what I did in White Castle, where you were doing so well in about 30% through the game that I went, okay, look, dude, you've played this 3 times.
Literally 30% through the game. It was end of round 1, wasn't
it? Yeah, I said to you, look, I'm so dispirited. I'm not having fun. Look at my board state, and using your expertise, can you tell me why? Because the reason I was crestfallen is that I felt I'd already lost.
Yes.
And I didn't want to sat there doing maths to calculate the most efficient possible turn I could get when I'd already lost.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I don't like about White Castle, is that it is possible, if you sit there and do the work to calculate off that whole board of possibilities and options and places you could put your dice, roughly what the best move is.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to sit there and crunch for 3 minutes to solve the game.
Yeah.
Which actually I didn't like as much as in Soloween, especially with the chess clock, taking a turn and being like,
right.
You know, I ruined it and I gave you a point.
Yes.
Which, I don't know, that to me is more accessible. Anyway, sorry, I've got so many
I get what you mean, where it's like that is a more accessible, like, I think that is more accessible and more immediately fun.
I think I just wanted to flag that you saying you don't have the brain for this, I don't actually think is true. And it sounds to me like if you sit the average person in front of like Concordia and they don't have that expertise with that stuff, they would be like, I don't have the brain for this. I don't know when to collect salt from like Rome. And you just don't have the desire to play the, I don't know, 100 games that get you to the point where you're super comfortable. Oh, you don't know 100 games, you play 10 games and you're comfortable with Concordia.
You need to play 10,000 hours of Soloine before you can truly call yourself an expert.
So you can get good. I don't know. I think really what you're exploring here is that you don't want to get good at games that seem simple and almost like straightforwardly intelligent.
Yeah. I think that's true.
And I think that's a really interesting place that board gamers end up, where you give them a simple game with three rules that is, you know, a bastard like Soloine or the game of Go or chess or whatever, and they look at that and go, I'm not interested in getting better. And I just don't know why that is.
I like some abstract games, and I guess this will be an ongoing project to determine what the secret sauce is in an abstract game that makes me sort of like turn to it. Because like Turncoats is a good example. That is an abstract game that I really love.
Right.
And I think that there is space for me to enjoy it. I just think that when everything is completely open information, I think that's where I struggle. When it's like, I mean, that's not true, because White Castle has open information.
White Castle's all open information, yeah.
Maybe it is an abstract game. Maybe you were right.
Let's not. I mean, we can.
My favorite abstract game is Ghost Blitz.
What about Hey, That's My Fish?
Hey, That's My Fish is great. I've worked it out. The thing I don't like in abstract games is two-player abstract games. Two-player head-to-head abstract games.
Yeah, because that is just a bastard.
That's my like specific crunch point, because I don't like playing Hey, That's My Fish at two, but at three, it's more fun because the table is like pulling in different directions and you feel like you have to like weigh up, like taking suboptimal moves for you personally so you can block someone else who's getting ahead. There's that like level of table talk and busyness. Whereas when you have an abstract game for two, like if you're doing that like parallel play, big crunch on a puzzle, I'd rather do it in a Euro game than an abstract game.
Because the losing player doesn't just get like absolutely punished by...
Yeah, and if someone's taking a while to take their turn, you could at least look at the nice pretty art on the board.
Yeah, during this sort of like exploratory discussion, I think I've come around with my new hill that I'm going to not die on, but I will stand on for a while.
You will age on it.
I will. Yes. And that hill is called, I think the board game community should stop using the phrase abstract games, because I think every single board game I'm looking at a shelf is an abstract game. I think we say abstract games when we sometimes mean simple games.
No, I disagree.
Okay, but Hey, That's My Fish isn't abstract, whereas Six Nimmt is.
Right. I don't think is Six Nimmt. I think that it's like abstract. An abstract game. Oh my god, this is so.
We'll be back next. Let's move on to some more board games. Why don't you leave a comment on this podcast on shutupandsitdown.com if you have an opinion on abstract games.
I think abstract should be left as a theme descriptor rather than a game descriptor.
So Soloine is not abstract.
No, but like those GIPF games or whatever they are.
Or Turncoats is.
Turncoats almost isn't an abstract game.
Does it have a theme?
Yeah, because it's like vaguely like three nations going to war against each other.
Oh, okay, there you go. Then it's not abstract, yeah.
Yeah, it's not abstract. No, we solved it.
Okay, yeah. But then, so we should just call abstract games simple games.
We should just call them games.
Oh my god, you've cracked it.
All games are games.
We did it!
This week on the channel, I did a video review of 535. It is maybe one of the driest card games I have ever put in front of my group. I say in the video that, I showed it to my friends, and at first, they didn't like it at all. And they said, Tom, we don't want to play this again. But I made them play it again. And by like four or five games, they were like, yeah, it's kind of interesting. This is a game that is kind of in direct competition with Scout, which I think takes a lot of the wind out of its sails.
I played this game with you and you introduced it by saying, here's a game that kind of doesn't need to exist because Scout exists.
I think that it is a change of pace to Scout. And I think the ways in which it is clever are different to Scout. I'm not going to get into those because they're hard to explain on the podcast and kind of boring.
So you said you got this game in a pack of three imported games.
Yes,
I did. What country were they from?
So some of them are from, it's a little confusing. So Bridge City Poker and 535 are from Portland Game Collective, who are a small publisher who put out various little small box card games that by the sounds of things are just popular in Portland in their little games community that they have down there. I think of those, Bridge City Poker is like an original title. I could be getting this completely wrong, so please call me out in the podcast comments if I got these wrong. But I think Bridge City Poker is a relatively original design from that sort of scene. 535 is originally a Japanese game that they have imported and, you know, brushed up with some English rules and slightly redesigned the box and things like that. The third game, Harvest, is just from Japan. I don't think it's got any print in English at the moment.
Cool. So people can see your 535 review on our YouTube channel.
They can.
Please. I don't know anything about Bridge City Poker or Harvest.
Harvest. So I'll talk about Bridge City Poker first, because it's a direct comparison to 535. And people are in the comments, and some people on Reddit were saying, well, do you like Bridge City Poker? Because it's very similar to this. It's sort of almost the same kind of thing, where you have a basic card game that's kind of a trick-taking game, where you have a pile in the middle and you can choose to play into it or not. If you manage to win a hand, your bonus is that you don't draw up any cards, because cards are all worth negative points. If you pass, if you play into a round but lose, you draw one card. If you don't play into a round, you draw two cards. If you play into a round and win, you don't draw any cards. First person to shed their whole hand is out of the round. Everyone else scores negative points for the cards in their hand, but they get to burn a bridge, which is...
Excuse me?
So all the different suits in the game are different bridges in Portland.
Oh, cool.
I presume Portland, anyway. And then you can get rid of all your cards of one suit in your hand. They no longer cost you negative points. Everything else costs you, I think, the value of the card, which gets pretty spicy and painful. The big twist in Bridge City Poker, though, is that it's a very basic little trick-taking game with some nice little extra bonus bits. One of which is that there are these power cards sprinkled throughout the deck that basically let you do like something a little weird. I can't think of what any of them do at the moment, so that's probably a bad sign for both the game and my podcasting ability.
Would you recommend people buy Bridge City Poker?
No.
Oh.
I wouldn't. You're hopping straight to that. No, I wouldn't. Because I was trying to articulate why I didn't like it as much as 535, and I think it's often about... It is a game about your hand getting slowly bigger and often missing out on opportunities than being able to capitalize upon them. Like, we had a lot of games in Bridge City Poker where... You are saying, I can't really do anything. So many times in that game, you will play into a hand and you will still draw a card, or you'll not be able to play anything and you'll draw. And there's a lot of not being able to participate in a round, rather than in 535, where there's often a lot of flexibility in whether you can participate in a round.
Yeah.
And when a player manages to lock people out of a hand successfully, it feels like they've really earned that.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes in Bridge City Poker, I don't know what about it causes this. I think it's because... It's like a full 535 has the way the deck is composed. It's a set of five cards and a set of three, then a set of five. So the deck goes from 1 to 5. Then there's no 6. Then it has 7, 8, 9. Then no 10. And then 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Which means that there are the cards that you can possibly have are more likely to be able to be played. I don't know if that's an insane sentence,
no, that makes
but it
sense.
Might be.
Yeah.
Whereas in Bridge City Poker, there's that larger range and also the power cards change things. So that if you get locked out of a round, it can often feel like, at least in the games that we played, it's just because someone had a better hand than you. Whereas in 535, there's lots you can do to mitigate against that hand, in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't love it. And I've played it a few times now, and I think it's a very Marmite game. And that's definitely what the comments on BoardGameGeek would suggest as
well. I mean, are we still in a place where if you want to order a very small and extraordinarily good card game, Scout is still the top of the pile?
Correct. Scout is still, I think... For most people, the best.
Okay.
It's great. It's so good.
It's so good.
I think 535 is really clever and devious and has some little extra stuff going on under the hood that people didn't realize. Like, a lot of the comments on BoardGameGeek are like, yeah, it's fine. It's not as good as Scout. But I think there is a little bit more to it. I just think that you probably only need one of that kind of game, and Scout is that game.
So then what's the final Japanese game you
played?
Harvest.
I love this game.
Oh,
I've
cool.
played this
is
a
it
whole
here?
Bunch. Yeah, let
it?
Me show you this game. It's tiny. Look at it. It's adorable.
Oh my God. It looks like an illustration that would be on like a packet of yogurt for Japanese children.
Yes, exactly. It has, so Matt described it as having match 3 mobile game energy.
Oh, both it's almost better than that.
Right.
Oh, no, you know, no, Matt's right.
Both in its aesthetics and its gameplay. So for donors to the site, there is a playthrough of this game going up at some point relatively soon. I don't know exactly when. But basically what it is you have a grid of fields in front of you. Let's say we're playing a 4-player game. Each player has a field which has 4 spaces in it, in a square.
So 2x2.
Yeah, a 2x2 square that you then combine into the center of the table into a big grid. So you've now got a 4x4 total grid because everyone puts their fields in the middle. All you do on your turn is you have a hand of 4 of these little tiny vegetable cards, the little square cards. They will have points on them ranging... Actually, I'll save that till last.
Okay.
All you're going to do is you're going to place a card from your hand. If you've got nothing in your area of the board, in those four squares, you have to place something in there. If it's empty, you can place one anywhere, in either one of your fields or in someone else's fields. As soon as you make a line of three of the same vegetable, either cabbages, tomatoes, or corn, bam, they all get harvested. If they're in your field, when they get harvested, they go to you. If they're in your opponent's field, when they get harvested, they go to them. Now, the big cool twist...
So you only make lines of three?
Only make lines of... Well, you could make a line of four, but it's more likely to make a line of three.
Okay.
And they can be orthogonal or they can be... orthogonal.
Yeah. Orthogonal or diagonal.
Yeah, orthogonal or diagonal. Shoot, yeah, that's correct. The twist, though, is that some of the cards are worth negative points, basically. And so you are planting negative points in your opponent's fields, trying, like, they will put a little negative 10 in your field, then you spitefully go, oh, you could have a negative 10 over on yours. And it's a game about collectively trying to manipulate this sort of shared crop of, like, this shared space to your own ends. It's continually very funny, because it's always a game about trying to, like, there's a couple of little twist cards in there. There's a tornado card that destroys a whole row. There's a harvest card that will, like, acts as a wild card, and oftentimes in a game a player will like manage to get rid of a whole clump of negative points by using a tornado, and they'll feel very happy about themselves, only for everyone else to immediately fill their field with tons of negative points. It's a game of like light collaboration. The thing that's really nice about it is that because of the way the board is set up, there will always be, or very likely to be, an imbalance. Someone will always get two crops and someone will always get one crop, because that's the way, you know, you can maximum have two crops in your side of the field, and a third one will make it into a row. And so it is always a game of uneven splits, which makes it also a game of like IOUs and like gentle collaboration that then just dissolves over the course of the game.
This sounds great.
It's really good. It's super Moorish. It's a lovely little filler. Like we just played so many games of it. You keep a running total. You can just play as many hands as you want. In the playthrough, we had a donut as a prize for the person who came first. We're going to just play two games, but we had to turn it into three because on the first round, I somehow managed to get like 150 points and the two other players got 10. It's also like, oh, there's just so many lovely touches. Like there is 140. So the cards range from minus 20 to plus 40.
Are the illustrations of the vegetables different based on whether they are negative or positive?
Correct.
Or 40?
Yeah, correct. Oh, the 40 has a little like glowing eyes and a crown.
That's what you want.
But the 40 point card, like there's one of each 40 point card. So when it comes out, like if you manage to sneak it in and get a whole row and clear it with your 40, that's fantastic. However, it more likely you have to play it into your field because you have to play something. So you have to play your 40. You put it in your field and then everyone goes, no, 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 no. And then immediately just makes it so that you'll lose like 20 of those points. It's great. I think it's super more, super charming. It's very, very light. Don't go in expecting like this real like, you know, crunchy little abstract puzzle like Soloween. It's just sweet. It's just really sweet. I had a very good time with it.
That's so good. And why are we not doing a video review on this? Because it's a Japanese game, so there are probably about 9 copies.
Yeah, there's like, yeah, it's very limited. You can get them from a website called travel-games.co.uk.
Okay.
There's like, there's not many copies of it.
Dude, there's
the
going to be two on travel-games. And yeah, so if you listen to this podcast and you've got to this segment, probably even if you listen to this podcast as soon as it came out, you've been beaten to the post by people who ordered this game as like halfway through the discussion.
Yeah, quite possibly. I will say, I mean, now these people are going to whatever. It is like, it's expensive because it's an import for what it is.
Oh, those suckers who bought it.
I think that you need to be, it's like, if you're playing filler games often, it's a good get. My friends who came down recently, like, couldn't get enough of it. They just wanted to play it over and over and over again. So it's a good little game, but it's expensive. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's expensive, slightly random, slightly light. But,
yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
A little fun little treat.
Lots of my favorite card games are like that.
It's a fun little treat.
Have you borrowed Archaeology yet? The dumbest.
Yeah, I played it wrong though.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I played it wrong so that all the things that let you into like the pyramid, which is like the core of the game.
Where it becomes a weird casino minigame, yeah.
Yeah, all the things that let you into the pyramid were in the pyramid.
Yes,
in my
so
game.
You were just archaeologists scrubbing around in the sand.
Yeah, trying to get a lighter.
Pyramid, which they could not get in, yeah.
That's all the games we got on this podcast. We talked about White Castle, an average but kind of interesting Euro game. We talked about Soloween, an average but kind of interesting abstract game. We talked about a whole little cluster of small import games that you probably can't buy. That's it. We did a whole podcast. How do you feel?
I feel like I achieved something.
That's
like
good.
I partook of the capitalist system and got the better of it today.
I feel like we should end the podcast in a similar zoomer way to how we started. We should sort of close the loop.
I'm dreading that you're going to ask me to do it.
Yeah, no, you should do it.
Okay. Hey, kids.
Oh, no.
I'm Quinn.
Who let Quinn's in here?
I like board games.
I hate this
version of
you.
But you don't like board games. Ugh, they're played by old people. Ugh. What are we going to do to get more young people to listen to the podcast? Because we have our YouTube stats and our audience is
ancient.
They are so old.
They're so old.
They're as old as me.
Yeah.
Some of them are even older.
I'm meant to be the sort of young blood that's
you know
come
what?
In
this is
to
on
join
your
the
desk,
site.
Tom.
Yeah, but the problem is I just keep getting older and like that sucks.
Oh man, yeah. Okay, we need someone. We need because you just came out of university when we hired you, but evidently that's
not
too
young
late.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we need pre-university.
Why don't there's a school between my house and yours. Why don't we go and wait outside the gates?
Yeah.
And say, hey kids.
Hey kids, wanna
you
be
wanna
on a
work
podcast?
For us?
Yeah, this is how we're appealing to the Zoomer audience.
Yeah, do you want to be on a podcast? And they'll say, absolutely.
And we'll go. And then we'll have them on next episode.
We will probably have more TikTok followers than them.
Yeah, that's very exciting.
Thanks to my
they'll be so
hard
impressed.
Work. Yeah, then we got like 30,000 followers.
Oh, that's loads.
I know.
Bye.
Okay.